May it please the Court, Your Honors, Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Margaret Eakin. The three primary issues raised by plaintiff in this case are all interrelated. Basically, they come down to the question of whether or not the administrative law judge provided any explanation for how she reached her residual functional capacity assessment for the plaintiff in this case. Social Security ruling 96-8P states that an ALJ's assessment of functional limitations must include a discussion of why restrictions and limitations are either accepted or not accepted by the ALJ. In this case, the ALJ summarized some of the evidence, but she provided no explanation as to how she reached her conclusion. In the Briscoe X. Rel. Taylor versus Barnhart case, this court held that contrary to 96-8P, the ALJ in that case did not explain how he arrived at his functional assessment conclusions, and that omission in and of itself was sufficient to reverse the administrative law judge's decision. In this case, the administrative law judge made the same error by failing to explain how she determined that the plaintiff was capable of sitting for 6 hours a day. It's important to remember that at the time of the hearing, the plaintiff was 61 years old. She had severe arthritis in one hip, required, according to her doctor, a hip replacement. And she testified that she had significant limitations in sitting, that sitting for over 10 to 15 minutes in a regular chair caused significant pain. She had to move around while sitting in the chair. She had to get up and move around. Generally, when she sat in a recliner chair with her legs elevated. The administrative law judge did not explain why she rejected that testimony in this case. The ALJ's credibility determination is also interesting, or as this court held in the Indoronto versus Barnhart case, it was puzzling because the ALJ seems to find the plaintiff generally not credible. And yet, the ALJ actually adopted the Ms. Eakin's limitations in standing and walking, and she found Ms. Eakin significantly limited in lifting and carrying. But she did not explain why, despite finding those limitations, she found no limitations in the ability to sit. There's nothing on this record from any doctor that indicates that a person with severe arthritis in a hip will be able to sustain prolonged sitting, or that they're more likely to be able to sustain prolonged sitting than, for instance, prolonged standing and walking. So the ALJ really came to that conclusion on her own with no basis in this record. In addition, the ALJ rejected all medical opinions. She found that the state agency doctor's opinions that the claimant could stand and walk for 6 hours a day was not restrictive enough, and that they didn't explain how Ms. Eakin would be able to stand and walk for 6 hours a day given her impairments.
Did she always walk with a cane?
She testified that she was at the time always walking with a cane.
And that did her history, or was that a recent?
I think she testified she'd been using the cane for a year, consistently for a year, prior to the hearing.
Was that prescribed for her by a physician?
The cane was not prescribed for her. She used it because she felt more comfortable using it. At times she used a walker, like when she went grocery shopping. She testified that she would use a walker. You know, this court has held, both in the Terry versus Astru case and in the Parker versus Astru case, that an ALJ errs by discrediting a claimant's testimony because a claimant uses a cane or a walker that's not prescribed. Because you don't need a prescription for a cane or a walker. If it makes you feel more comfortable, you can go to a medical supply store or some other store.
Dr. Mess was the only orthopod to offer an opinion.
That's correct.
What was his opinion?
His opinion was that the plaintiff was limited to standing for less than 1 hour and sitting for only 1 hour in an 8-hour workday in the context of a work setting. So an extreme limitation in the claimant's ability to sustain any postures.
How did the ALJ dispose of his testimony?
She did so by finding that the evidence that his treatment notes didn't support the extreme limitations that he set forth in his functional capacity assessment. And his treatment notes were sparse, but they did note probably the most important aspect of the case, which was that Ms. Eakin has severe arthritis in the hip and he did provide the opinion that she required a hip replacement.
But he notes also that her limp was only slight, doesn't he? Doesn't Dr. Mess note that?
That's correct.
It seems a little inconsistent with severe arthritis.
Well, you know, based on this record, I don't think that we can say that because Dr. Mess did not indicate how long he watched Ms. Eakin walk. If he watched her walk across the examining room for 10 or 15 feet and she had a slight limp, that doesn't necessarily mean that if she had to walk a half a block that it wouldn't be a severe limp. There's no, you know, the ALJ didn't question that, and there's nothing in the record really indicating how long of an observation the doctor gave. And I think his experience as an orthopedic surgeon would allow him to determine that based on the severity of the arthritis that he saw, what the claimant's limitations were. But even if the ALJ reasonably rejected Dr. Mess's opinion because of the kind of dearth of information provided in his treatment notes, in the Swede versus Astru case, it's a non-precedential order by this court, the court held that once an administrative law judge rejects all opinions from all doctors who have provided opinions in the case, that leaves an evidentiary deficit, and that the ALJ is not allowed to fill that evidentiary gap with her own lay opinions. So once the ALJ said, no, I don't agree with the state agency doctors that the claimant can be on her feet for 6 hours a day, and I don't agree with Dr. Mess that the claimant is limited to sitting and standing for less than 8 hours in a work day, she then had to have some basis in this record to say, well, I find the claimant can stand and walk for 2 hours. Why not only 1 hour, or why not 3 hours? There's not, the ALJ doesn't have any independent knowledge, because she's not a doctor, of how this limitation in a over 60-year-old woman would, what specific limitations in standing and walking it would cause. And similarly with sitting. The ALJ found that the claimant could sit for 6 hours a day, but there's no explanation in this record to explain how she came to that conclusion. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Ms. Kleinman.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Ann Kleinman on behalf of the Commissioner. This case doesn't involve very much medical evidence. It's fairly short and sweet. The ALJ properly analyzed the claimant's residual functional capacity.
You know, the most surprising thing I see in this case is the ALJ said if she didn't have a hip replacement surgery, that tended to prove that she wasn't really very disabled. Now, those of us who are afflicted with these problems face that kind of an option all the time. And I can assure you that everybody that has a hip replacements can make you worse as well as better, and so can knee replacements. So I think that whole analysis is crazy, frankly.
Well, I don't think the ALJ found that the failure to undergo surgery was a basis for denying benefits. What the ALJ was looking at is her complaints of pain and how disabling that alleged pain was. And he looked at the failure to do the surgery, her statements that she can live with the pain, the lack of anything more than just conservative treatment with medication. There was no injection, no physical therapy, no TENS unit. No diagnostic studies were ordered, like an MRI, a CT scan. She sought very infrequent treatment, essentially just once a year after 2005. The discrepancy between her alleged onset date and the date she first sought treatment, and her statement when she did first seek treatment, that pain had only existed for a month since she fell down. The ALJ considered all of this evidence in addition to the physician opinions and concluded that the evidence showed she had the residual functional capacity to do sedentary work for her past relevant work, which was sedentary, but not more than that. The ALJ didn't say that she didn't have pain. The ALJ agreed that she had pain. It just wasn't of a disabling magnitude. Counsel argued that the ALJ did not reject or that the ALJ rejected her allegations regarding her ability to sit, but that's not true. The ALJ considered exactly what she said, which was she can sit for an hour, which was in her her daily activities report. She also said she could sit for 15 to 20 minutes. If she can sit for just 20 minutes, then, according to the vocational expert, she can do her past relevant work. So her testimony and her allegations regarding her ability to sit were actually consistent with the ALJ's decision.
How about this testimony of Dr. Metz, who's the only orthopedic specialist involved in this case, as far as I make out?
The ALJ rejected both the opinion of Dr. Metz, who was the treating physician, and the state agency physician. The ALJ explained that she rejected Dr. Metz's opinion because it was unsupported by his treatment notes. And the ALJ also explained that Dr. Metz failed to explain why he gave the limitations that he identified. As counsel has admitted, those treatment notes were very, very sparse. She essentially saw him once a year, only when she needed to get medication, which was her testimony. There's nothing in his treatment notes that supports more than a restriction to sedentary work, or that supports a finding that she couldn't do her past relevant work, which only required 20 minutes of sitting and 5 minutes, a very minimal amount of standing and walking.
Well, I don't find it surprising that she would see an orthopod only once a year, frankly. I don't regard that as very indicative of anything.
The regulations indicate that frequency of treatment is a factor that the adjudicator is supposed to consider in evaluating the credibility of a claimant's subjective complaints of pain. And here, she only saw him once a year, only when she needed medication, but he didn't prescribe enough medication to last a year. So something is not jiving. Her frequency of treatment doesn't jive with her medication or her need for medication. If the court has no further questions,
we do not. Thank you, Ms. Klein.
Thank you.
Mr. Schultz?
Commissioner argues that the claimant in a form said she could sit for an hour and that the prescription medication the claimant got doesn't somehow jive with the treatment, but the ALJ didn't rely on either of those factors in coming to her conclusion, and therefore that's what this court has called post hoc rationalization on the part of the commissioner. As to the claimant's decision not to see her doctor more often, we cited in our brief at page 20, Social Security ruling 96-7P, which specifically says an ALJ should consider reasons that a claimant may not seek additional treatment. And one of those reasons is that the individual may have been advised by a medical source there is no further effective treatment that can be prescribed that would benefit the individual. So other than the surgery, which Ms. Eakin decided that she wasn't ready to undergo at that time, if the only effective treatment was medication to help relieve the pain, then she was reasonable in only seeing the doctor once a year. Additionally, that same ruling in the first example says an individual may structure their daily activity so as to minimize their symptoms, and, quote, the individual may be living with the symptoms, seeing a medical source only as needed for periodic evaluation and renewal of medications. exactly what the plaintiff did in this case. So the ruling contemplates that some people will only see a doctor as necessary for medications, especially if there's nothing further that can be done for them. And finally, I just wanted to point out that while the commissioner argues that the ALJ reasonably found that the plaintiff's pain was not of a disabling magnitude, the ALJ, in fact, found that her pain was very great. She found that she could only stand and walk for 2 hours a day, which is a very significant limitation. She found she could only lift up to 10 pounds, which is also a very significant limitation. The question is, how did she reach those conclusions and yet find no limitations in the ability to sit? And on that, the record is silent.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Schultz, and you as well, Ms. Kleinman. We will take the case under advisement.